Good evening. Let's get started here. So, this lesson tonight, I kind of struggled with a little bit because when they asked me about it in the territory that this I just walk around, so that David took place with this, it's kind of an arid area, it's kind of a mountainous area, and I kind of thought, well, how in the world does water fit into this? So I kind of had to think about it a little bit and go through things, and I thought, what am I going to do to make this work? So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask some questions, and I want to ask Anne, what's the significance of water in your life? Dan? Our bodies are 70% water. And Dan almost died in one. Derek?
Like to drink it, like to swim in it.
Like to drink it, like to swim in it. That's right.
Like to shower in it.
Like to shower in it, that's right. Yes. Alan? It's the only thing that'll do the job, that's right. Ann, did you come up with anything? You can't do with that water. Right. Mitch, I'd be interested to get your input on the significance of water. You're a boiler man, you know, and stuff. So,
yeah.
Water does what?
It's the whole job.
It's powerful, isn't it? There, you hit on two things right there, destructive and helpful. In what ways is it destructive? Give me some ways that water is destructive. Anne said the flood. The power of water in floods is very destructive. It changes people's lives. Donna? Jenny, you raise your hand.
I was just going to say it can take rocks down to very tiny, it can wear away.
Mm-hmm. It can. Can it be used for protection? Seth, yes. Go ahead, Seth, yes. You, Mr. Water, that's right.
Yes, we use water to put out fires.
For protection, right? Can water also be used in a defensive measure? We float big ships with it, shows our military strength to protect us, right? Seth?
You see, back in medieval times, castles built.
Okay. So when we look at things and go through and we see about water, we know that from the very beginning, that in the beginning, that in the creation of the earth, the Genesis talked about God. As we go through the different times through here, we learn we got Noah, the flood. What did God do to the earth with the water? Flooded it. He destroyed it. When the Israelites left Egypt, what happened with the Red Sea? So at that point in time, when we talk about, was the water a defensive mechanism or was it an offensive mechanism? That's right. And then it became a what? Offense. That's right. So as we go through this, and I looked at this, it was interesting to think about this. And the lesson, if I'm not mistaken, was 1 Samuel. It was chapter 23. I think it started in verse 29 and just went into chapter 24. It's a very little short little piece right here. And when I look at that, it says, and David went up from thence and dwelt in strongholds in Gedi. And it came to pass that when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told to him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of Engedi. Move this down a little bit. It's too loud. Up. You want it up? It's loud. Maybe I'll talk quieter. So here's a little history on Engedi. It was called the Fountain of the Kid, identical with the present Engedi. According to 2 Chronicles chapter 20 and verse 2, it's the same as Hazon Tamor, mentioned in Genesis 14:7. It was occupied by the Amorites, and as of being attacked by the Shedolomar after leaving Kadesh and El Paran on his way to the Vale of Siddim. The place is situated on the west shore of the Dead Sea. I'm going to go forward one more. It's going to be situated on the west shore of the Dead Sea. And then it's also going to be midway between north and south ends, as it was included in the territory of Judah. So actually, if you look at it, which is hard to see, it's right here. It's right here in this area right here, so it's like halfway in between. And as you can see right here, what you're going to see, that this is a very mountainous area. It's a very rugged area. The mountains, there's not a lot of vegetation there, and it was called a wilderness. It was a wilderness area of Maon, as it was called. So the spot is rendered attractive by the verdure clothing, by reason of immense fountains of warm water, 80 degrees, which pour out from beneath the limestone cliffs. In the time of Solomon, he mentions this in the first chapter in verse 13, where he talks about this in the Song of Solomon. He talks about the cliffs here and how the palms and the beauty of it was at this area. And I find this interesting because as you go through this and we talk about it, we found that Josephus also mentions it as a beautiful palm groves. In the time of Ishbulus, it was a still place, a palace of importance. But since the Middle Ages, it's been almost deserted, being occupied now by only a few Arabs. The oasis occupies a small area a few hundred feet above the Dead Sea, marked by the 650-foot sedimentary terrace heretofore described as the Dead Sea. The limestone borders rise so abruptly to a height of 2,000 feet immediately on the west that the place can only be approached only by a rock path. Two streams, the Wadi Shagur and the Wadi El-Ari, descend on either side of the precipitous rocky gorges from the uninhabitable wilderness, separating it from Bethlehem and Hebron. It was in the caves opening out from the sides of these gorges that David took refuge from Saul in 1 Samuel 24 and 1, and during the reign of Jehoshaphat in 2 Chronicles 20 and 2, the children of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir attempted to invade Judah by the way of Engedi, but were easily defeated as they came up from the gorges to occupy the advantaged field of battle chosen by Jehoshaphat. So the thing that I want to think about this, when we talk about water and we talk about this, We think about that water has a defensive mechanism and it also has a offensive mechanism. So with this, the thing that I think about this is David takes off from here and he leaves because, well, he was hiding, as we learned in chapter 24, he was just kind of hiding out back, and he was had been dealing with the Philistines, and David is in the wilderness of Engedi. This is in 24, it talks about that. But when we go back into 23 and we start, it says, in verse 19, it says, "Then came up Ziphites to Saul to Gibeah, saying, Doth not David hide himself with us in the strongholds in the wood, and in the hill of Hialeah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Now therefore, O king, come down according to all desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him unto the king's hand. And Saul said, Blessed be ye of the Lord, for ye have compassion on me. He said, Go, I pray you, and prepare not where to see this place, and to haunt him, but go and go, for it is thus for me that the delivereth us subtilly. See therefore and take knowledge of all lurking places where he hideth himself, and come ye again with me certainly, and I will go with you. Come to pass, if it be in land that I will search out throughout all of the thousands of Judea. And when they arose and went to Ziph before Saul, but David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the plain on the south of Jeshimon. And then it says, Saul went ahead to seek him. And they told David where if he come down into a rock abode in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that he was pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon, and Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David on his men on that side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for the fear of Saul. For Saul and his men compassed David and his men round about to take them. So, it's hard to figure out how does this, from sea to sea, from what we're doing, and how does this water fit in with what we're doing here? And I think you have to go to a practical application here, because when we think about water and it acts as a defense here, we think about, like we say, the exile from Egypt, David fleeing Saul. One that interested me, if you remember when we were here and we talked about the Jerusalem, when they built the well for the city when it was all encompassed, that the well was enclosed and they actually tunneled it underground so that they could get water to sustain themselves. So at that point in time, they could stay within the walls and be protected from the enemy forces that were coming against them, and they never had to go outside. And I remember when the Dale Manor was here, and he talked about that. That just intrigued me so much, because they dug, like, I think it was over 1,000 foot or 1,500 foot or something like that, and there was literally no fall. There was no fall for this water to go from point A to point B. And they were able to do that, and they dug from both ends on this, and they met in the middle, and the water flew just exactly. And that's one of those that I talk about when you think about miracles that were never talked about. That was a miracle, because if you've ever, Mitch can talk about this, when you're dealing with grade and you're dealing with percentages, there's tolerances sometimes are very, very small. And to come at it from both ends, if one guy's off just a titch over a long period of time, that titch turns into a great amount. But when you think about that, what I'm thinking about it is a defense. That was a defense for the Israelites at that time, because they were able to stay inside and protect themselves against that way. And it also did what? It also made it as an offensive advantage to him as well, too, because they were able to sustain themselves and be able to keep their strength and keep their livelihood and doing what they needed to do. And then finally, also, as a defense here, the one thing from our point here in our time, we can talk it as what? Water is what? As a defense, it's a cleansing of a sinful soul. It's that cleansing of a sinful soul. And we can use that to what? To help us defeat Satan, to help us defeat the things that are going on in our lives, in our world right now, to help us get ahead. And as an offense, what was water used as an offense, as Dan stated there, as the Israelites went through the Red Sea, it became a exile from Egypt. It was an offense to protect them from the Egyptians. So it was like all the forces being thrown at them. We can look at the Great Flood. That was an offense because the world was in shambles, and God decided at that point that He was going to use water to correct all those problems. God had nothing to defend. And that's the thing to think about on that, right? God wasn't defending anything. God could give us the world and everything that was going on, and yet the people were abusing it, the people were doing what was wrong. So what did God do? He used water to what? To win His battle at this point in time, to start the civilization over again. The crossing of the Jordan. How many times did we cross as the Jordan crossed? There's 5 accounts of it, right? And every time it was used in an offense to do what? In a situation. The first time that we talked about crossing the Jordan was when we were going to go across Jericho, and the leaders took the ark and they stuck their feet in the edge of the water, and at this point in time the water was flowing extremely hard because the scripture says, and the historians say, that in the harvest time and in the planting time that the Jordan run bank to bank, it run full. So basically it flooded, just like the Mississippi or the Missouri does for us. It was flooding like that, and the scriptures tell us that when the priests stuck their feet in the water, that the water just all blocked up upstream, and then downstream there was no chance of any backflow or anything like that, and that gave the ability for the Israelites to go through at that point. And then when they stepped out, everything come back around. There was 5 different times that we can talk about that this water was used as a defense or it was used as an offense. And I like to think that we use this water as an offense. We use it as what? As a way to keep Satan at bay. What do I mean by that? How does this water that I'm talking about, what we're dealing with in our life practicals, how does this keep Satan at bay? They were, and that's absolutely right. Whether it was defensive, or whether it was offensive, but in our lives right now, what it does for us, the water acts as a defense to us when we do what? When we accept Christ and we become baptized. That water is our defense. It comes in, it fights the battles for us, it helps to knock away Satan, to do what needs to be done. And then because of that water, as we come through it and we move forth, I like to think Seth is a firefighter, it fights our fires. Even though it's not the water and we only have to go down into that water one time, that water's still there though, and it's constantly flowing. And as Christ talked about it with the woman at the well, it was the water of life. I'm the wife. You'll never thirst with me. And it's water. Why would Christ say that? What's the thoughts behind that, Donna?
I think more of that was Him being the living water and never thirsting is more feeding on Him, feeding on His word, letting Him refresh us, you know, continually. And so we have defense against
Him. Right. You're right. It does, and sometimes, and when we go back here and we look at where Saul was, and where David was, and what they were going, the scriptures talk about that Saul or David went come and Art helped me with this as we were talking, as he said, I think you talked about it on a study with Ruth. Is that correct, Art? It's the Jordan Valley, that's right. And as this says right here, it was 2,000-foot cliffs. 2,000-foot cliffs, and what was interesting, and it says that it went up in rapid limestone. So if you all that are familiar around here, the one place that we can think that goes straight up like that, what, the ledges? the ledges down there in the Des Moines River Valley, they're straight up. I mean, they're pretty straight up cliffs. So the story, when you think about this, you can always come up with a little bit of humor in any type of Bible story that you're coming up. So David takes off and he takes his dudes and they go and they work their way down the valley and they go through the water. They go through the Jordan Valley down there and there's some water down there. And they go up the other side and the scripture says that David's over here on this side and Saul's on the other side. So there's that thing that water has made the defense, and I can go back and think about what Donna said about when the floods of 93, when the great flood went over the spillway, what did it do? It cut a big valley, it cut a big gorge, and it would be hard to climb up and down. Well, think about this. We've got this valley like this and this gorge, so now they're down on the other side. So was it really worth Saul's attempt to go and try to get David on the other side? Apparently not, because he decided what? He's going to go back. And David's on the other side, and he looks at this, and this is water. This is one of these situations where water acts as a defense. Water acts as a defense from the bad that's being posed to us, that protects us and allows us to have God on our side and lets us be in an offensive status. Sometimes some of our valleys are deep. Sometimes some of our trails and some of the things we do are very rough. But we're able to go through this, and we're able to make our lives because of this water. And all through society, somebody brought up here a minute ago in the medieval times, the castles. They put the water around for a defensive purpose like that. Most major cities, you know, are on the water, and a lot of times they were put on the water. Why? It was because of the simple fact that water protects. God uses these tools and this water to help us, and it's the godly cities, the godly societies that have survived. Art, I think when we did the study of all the churches, the Asian churches and everything like that, it was amazing that there was hardly any of them left, and there was only like one or two of them, and they were ones that were, they were centered on the water. This water and what we're going through this week is a very great deal. And so when I look at Isaiah 33:15-16, it says, "Those who walk righteously and speak uprightly, who despise the gain of oppression, who have gave away a bribe instead of accepting it, who stop their ears from hearing the bloodshed and shut their eyes from looking on evil, they will live on the heights. Their refuge will be the fortress of rocks, and their food will be supplied, and their water will be assured." That's Isaiah telling us there that God's going to provide for us. He's our rock. Our food's going to be supplied, and their water will be assured. Hebrews 10:22 says, "Let us approach with true heart, with full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed pure with the water." More of that defense. More of that defense, that water looking out for us. That water cleansing us. Amos 5:24 says, "But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream." And Revelations 22:1-2 says, "As in the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city." What's the significance of this story tonight? And why we chose this, and why we can take heed from this. What is it about this little short little verse and this little area that we can look at right here that we can take and tie this water in with this and really make this something that can apply to us on our daily lives and what we do? Alan?
Well, this kind of goes in a completely different direction. It is, you said, a very
That's right. And that's interesting because it goes to show us where, I like that, where God's character is. Because as David being a man of God, that he shows that God is compassionate, God is willing to forgive, God is willing to look over things and do things, and that's exactly what happens right here, because you're right. Yeah, David, that perfect opportunity. Perfect opportunity. But with that, how can we apply this to us? Because it's more, you know, I talk about, okay, it's defensive. So, right, great. Here it is. It's, you know, it's the water that cleanses our souls. It's the water that gives us the ability to be able to live life out here and deal with all of the demons and all of the bad stuff that's out there that gives us the protection. But also, it gives us the strength. I like how Donna puts that. It gives us the ability to know to God, to grow, to feed us, to read in the Word, to learn and to survive and do things. How can we use this example from what's happened here and with the situations that we're in to think about, all right, How do I turn the cheek? How does this help me to turn the cheek? How does this help me to be able to go day to day? Because it's ugly out there right now. It's ugly. I don't like to watch the news. I don't like to read anything. I don't like to do anything at all because I don't know where the next person's going to decide that I've had enough. That I just want to go out and make an example of somebody. How does this allow us to take from this and be able to use it to our advantage? How does this story help us? Lou?
In many places in the New Testament, Jesus refers to the kingdom being like, and then he goes ahead and provides an example in terms that we understand, using symbols that we understand. The water that has been described in each one of these, anyway, is a symbol, a human understood element that we understand that represents
Go ahead. Got something else she's going to say. But I'm just. Well, think about this. This is interesting, and because I thought somebody would catch this, but we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks on Wednesday nights, we've been talking about this justice deal. And in Amos it says here, let justice roll on like a river and righteous like a never-failing stream. So this is where we go back that we can use this. And Alan said it exactly when he talked about Saul going into the cave. And that point in time, and David was right there. But David treated him with what? With justice, which we talk about, which we are to give everybody. With the justice that treats everybody, gives everybody a certain amount of what? Dignity. It gives us that dignity. So this justice flowing on like a river is that river of dignity that we take out of this, that we deal with our people, people that we don't want to deal with. Mitch and I was having a conversation before class here. We won't go into it, but there's a certain amount of dignity that we expect from our employers to give to us, and in turn, we try to give that back. You try to, and that justice comes in there, whether it's from an employee standpoint or it's from relationships as far as us amongst each other here, or whether it's somebody that we don't know. This river of justice, this water, this is water is just a symbol. But it's such a symbolic part of the scriptures all the way through, of everything that goes on, that we can take at this and we can say, okay, up, down, bad times, whatever we're going to do. David treated Saul with dignity and went on, and then he turned around and got to a point on the other side of the river where he could stay away and not get himself in that situation. And it said, righteousness like a never-flowing stream. When we treat our people with dignity, when we treat people in society with dignity, the justice that's talked about here, Amos is telling us what? That the righteousness will be like a never-failing stream. That stream that never does what? That stream that never dries up. That stream that's always there. Because we're doing what? We're being fair to everyone. We're using that water as a defensive mechanism to protect ourselves from the world, from Satan, from anything that goes on. And then we're also using it as an offensive method here to do what? To provide that hope, that fairness, that love that God shows towards everyone, so that by doing that, God is going to be what? He's going to be just to us. He's going to be just to us. And in turn with that, it's going to give us the righteousness that will never go away. Go ahead. That's a fabulous point, and that's the thing that we have to take from it too, right? It's not us. It's not for us to make that. And man, that's hard. That's hard. I have to really look at myself hard at the end of the day and in the morning sometimes and think, who are you? Who are you to look at someone and say, what a tool that dude was, you know, because he didn't agree with me. Right? Or do whatever, because they don't have the same looks, the same thoughts. They don't see things the way I see it. And that's going to cause problems. Because when I judge somebody like that, God's going to judge me that same way. That goes right back to this what? That goes back to this justice. This goes right back to that deal again. And then like it says, the angel showed me a river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street onto the city. That's what the righteousness is. The righteousness comes from the just that we do. And we can come back through it with knowing that we approach it with full assurance of faith, that our hearts are sprinkled clean from an evil conscience when our bodies are washed with pure water. Water is a defense. God protected all the people a lot of times here. He protected his people a number of times. Do we think that he's going to protect us? Probably not in the situation where we're going to be having the river parted for us. Not where we're going to have the river open up for us and allow us to walk through. Probably not going to have to stay inside the walls of a city and go underground so that the water gets to us so that we can survive. But what is he going to do with that defense? He's going to cleanse our soul. He's going to cleanse our soul, and our souls need cleansing. As Christ set up the church for us and the apostles showed us the way that we're to worship and the things that we're to do, if it wasn't necessary for us to have our soul, Christ wouldn't have told us in the Great Commission, you know, for he that believes and is baptized will be saved. As an offense, it's going to help us symbolically what? To get away from those Egyptians that we've got coming at us. It's going to keep us from being destroyed. It's going to help us the times that we need to cross the Jordan. It's going to give us those opportunities. Opportunities face us daily. And the big thing it's going to do is it's going to keep Satan at bay. What was this story about? I think it was about exactly, in a nutshell, exactly what Alan told us right there. It was showing the character of God in David. And that how passion is there and how that's what we need to have. There's not a lot there. There's a lot ahead. That's about all I've got. I'm about 5 minutes short from where I need to be. Yes, Jim.
The reason that Satan's kept at bay is because when we're immersed in Christ, he fills us with his Holy Spirit.
That's right. That's absolutely right. That's the whole thing of it here. That's right. That's how it keeps us at bay. And it acts as what? It acts as that offense for us. It helps us. It helps us to fight that off. That Holy Spirit helps us to fight that off. That's absolutely right. Anybody else? Anything? That's about all I got. We're about 5 minutes from what we need to go here. About 8 minutes. About 8 minutes. At 10 after, we are supposed to go to the... 8:10. 8:10. So you got about 7 or 8 minutes here. Any comments, anything else? If not, that's all I've got. Thank you.